Laura Mosher is with us now, a master gardener. I love master gardeners. They always teach me something I didn't know. And we're going to focus now on those invasive plants and specifically those vines that seem to have quite literally taken a chokehold over so many of our trees. It's extraordinary. Once you look up and see them, you can't unsee them. Laura Mosher, welcome to the show. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So, Laura, you are a master gardener, and you are doing your thing as a volunteer. Tell us about it.
I am a master gardener. I took the classes at UConn in the Bartlett Arboretum in Stamford, and part of the curriculum is being able to identify invasive plants. I was walking around. I live in Darien. I was walking around our beautiful park, Cherry Lawn, and started actually seeing lots of invasives. I mean, some of these vines, Tarzan would be jealous.
Yeah.
And so I contacted Parks and Rec, and I got some of the commissioners to walk out with me, and we started identifying areas that needed some eradication. And we've started a plan. We've got a working group in order, and we are going to tackle what's growing in our parks.
How are you going to do that? And you're doing this on a volunteer basis. So what is? Are you going to be chopping down those vines? Because, I mean, they're extraordinary. They stick to those. I'm watching them now from my window. They stick to those trees. They wrap around them. I mean, they have a chokehold.
They do. So the ones that wrap around the trees are pretty much the Oriental bittersweet. Their goal is to girdle and choke a tree. The porcelain berry is the type of vine that will climb up a tree and drape over the canopy of it, block out sunlight, and kill the tree that way. So first thing you want to do is cut the vine at the root, right at the ground. You don't want to pull on the vines because you're in danger of, you know, hurting the tree, breaking limbs. But it's going to be a process. I mean, this is years of process. And the truth of the matter is we've all got invasives in our yards.
It's unbelievable. And, I mean, they have taken over. It's like I open my eyes and I can't believe how aggressive these vines are. Now, these vines are not native to Connecticut. Tell us about them, Laura.
No, they're not native, and which is pretty much why they grow so out of control. Say the Oriental bittersweet, which is the one you're talking about that twines around. Well, there is an American, there's a North American version of bittersweet. We don't see it very much any longer because the Oriental bittersweet has outperformed it, and that's what these invasives do. They push out our native plants so that they don't have an opportunity to grow and thrive. These invasives don't have any predators. They don't have anybody that wants to eat them down to the ground. Anybody that's planted something in their yard and has had deer or rabbits eat it to the ground, they are not eating the invasives because it's not supposed to be here.
I see.
So
I see what you're saying. In other words, the invasives have the edge because they don't have any natural enemies.
Exactly. And invasives are more than just plants. You were talking earlier about A Tree Grows in Brooklyn.
Yes, my favorite book. Remember that book? Does anybody remember that book?
Oh, I love that book. Well, the tree is the tree of heaven. It looks like a sumac tree.
Yes. Yes.
Well, the tree of heaven is an invasive tree, and it is the host plant to a horrible insect called a spotted lanternfly. And that insect is decimating our native trees.
Unbelievable.
And it lives on the tree of heaven.
Is that the tree in A Tree Grows in Brooklyn? A Tree Grows in Brooklyn was written in the 50s. Okay. Well, maybe the 30s.
Well,
it wasn't. It was written in the 30s.
Invasive plants have been around here. I mean, they've been around here since we started colonizing this area. you know, seeds, and people would bring their trees, their little saplings over from the mother country and plant it here because they liked the nuts, they liked, you know, whatever, and there you go.
So how long does a species get to be here before it's no longer considered invasive? I mean, isn't a couple of hundred years long enough?
That's a good question. It depends on the species. A lot of our hybridized plants are plants that have assimilated so that they have learned how to, they've cross-pollinated with some native plants. And so sometimes it's even hard to find a straight species, a species that is strictly a native plant because of cross-pollination. We're talking about the invasive plants, the ones that are killing off our native plants, not necessarily ornamental plants that originate in Asia and we all have them in our yards, you know, because we use them as foundation plants. But we're talking about the ones that are really destructive, mugwort and the Japanese honeysuckle and Japanese knotweed, which is an impossible plant to get rid of.
Wow. And we want to get rid of them because they crowd out other healthy growth. They prevent the kind of, pollination and insects that we need to have our natural ecosystem be healthy. Is that why we want to get rid of all of those?
For those reasons, Japanese barberry has been found to foster Lyme disease. Well, not Lyme disease. They foster the ticks that cause Lyme disease.
Interesting.
So what happens is the white-footed mouse likes to live under this little microcosm of environment underneath the barberry, and the white-footed mouse has got ticks. And there you go.
We're chatting with Laura Mosher, Master Gardener in Darien. I got to ask you more about this, Laura. Let's talk about these vines around these trees. What kind of implementation, what kind of tools are you carrying? I mean, I'm not strong at all. I don't even know if I could do the kind of physical labor necessary to attack these roots at the bottom. But tell us what you're carrying. What are you using to get rid of these vines?
Well, right now I'm just, you know, regular clippers just to clip the bottoms to stop the growth. And then once you stop the growth, the vine itself that's tangled in the tree will dry and will just fall out of the tree. That's really what you're hoping for. I think that.
So we got to look for the root. And we've got to take the regular pruning shear, you know, like the green-handled one, and just cut at it?
Yep.
Is that what it is?
Okay. Just cut at it. And you'll know you've got an oriental bittersweet because if you do get the root out, the root is orange.
Okay.
It's an orange color, which is really interesting and unlike other plants.
All right. We've got a question for you, Gloria from Westport, a question about bamboo. That's a really good question, Gloria. Welcome to the show today.
Hello, everybody. Just wanted to bring up the fact that maybe you want to talk a little bit about bamboo. It seems to be people are planting bamboo trees and plants, and once you plant them, you cannot get rid of them. My girlfriend has for years, it just keeps taking over her garden. So you may want to make people aware of the fact that do not ever plant bamboo.
That is the truth. Bamboo grows with rhizomes under the ground. So even if you cut the bamboo at the surface, if you don't dig deep and get every inch of the rhizome, you will get more bamboo.
Yeah.
Bamboo doesn't fruit. So it's not like the birds are eating berries and flying off and your neighbors down the street are going to get bamboo. But your next door neighbor who lives next to the bamboo will certainly.
That's her. Her neighbor planted it, and no matter what she has tried, she cannot get rid of it. She's tried digging it out. It still returns constantly, and it's invading her whole, side of the property. So
it's a nightmare.
a nightmare. Okay.
Anyway, have a good day, everybody.
Thank you, Gloria. Thank you, Laura Mosher, for being on. I saw that you had created this volunteer thing in Darien. Could you let our listeners know or give them some tips if they want to be part of a volunteer group of people that are attacking these invasive plants in their towns, in their yards, in their parks? What would you advise?
I think first off, look to see if you have a chapter of the Pollinator Pathway in your town. It's a terrific organization. It started in Connecticut, and it's all about landscaping without pesticides and getting rid of invasives. So look for that. Contact your pay attention to what's going on in town. There's lots of towns have land trusts. There's really a lot of interest these days, particularly since we've spent 2 years of COVID lockdown, that people are interested in getting out and working on landscaping. Doug Tallamy, who's an entomologist from the University of Delaware, really brought it to the forefront. I saw him at the Darien Library talking about what people can do in their own properties. We do not need to wait for the large landowners, the big central parks, the big agricultures to turn this around. Like the caller just said about her friend with the bamboo, we can make a difference in our own backyards.
Yeah, and that's why I'm doing No Mow May. That's why I'm proselytizing about No Mow May. And this is my second year doing
it. I'm doing No Mow May, too.
Yes.
And I've never done it before. I haven't seen anything really interesting pop up in my yard yet, other than some ferns, which was kind of interesting.
Well, I have seen an awful lot of, I've seen a proliferation of, this is my second year doing it. I've seen a proliferation of those yellow buttercupy. I don't know the right name for them, but they look like little yellow flowers, but a ton of them this year, much more than last year. And what I am seeing, and I always see birds, but I'm seeing more birds. I'm seeing more birds. And I love that.
I do have the yellow buttercups also. And I think that's something that people don't understand is when you have the violets show up in your yard and dandelions, you look and there are bees out there already. But your flowers haven't bloomed. They really are counting on those violets and dandelions. They need them.
They need them. So they're going to have them. They're going to have them for another 2.5 weeks. And then I'm going to mow and I'm going to leave the clippings on the ground. That's what I'm going to do.
Amen. Yep.
That's what I'm going to do. No more blowing, except maybe probably the leaves, maybe, you know, in the fall once. I'll let Bill clean up the yard with some blowing once. Other than that, I'm not going to hear those leaf blowers on my yard all. I can't wait to not hear them because that's much noisier than just cutting the lawn. Much noisier. And they're going to be gone.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm not going to have them. I can't wait. And I wish I was spreading a movement among my whole neighborhood and my whole earshot so that we had fewer leaf blowers, because apparently they're not even necessary. Not only are they noisy, but they're not even necessary.
No, they're not necessary. And in fact, if anybody realized it, I grew some sage. And in November, I went out to cut some sage to bring in to cook. And I hadn't looked underneath the leaf. And I should have before I cut my branch, because there were an insect had laid some eggs under there. And so I laid it down. And that's the thing, is we don't realize that our insect life is going to sleep amongst our leaves and amongst our plants. When we go to put things to bed and we cut down the stems and we rake up the leaves and everything is, you know, so pristine, we have thrown away an entire generation of insects. Yeah. And that's bird food.
Yeah, I get it. Thank you so much, Laura Mosher. Thanks for educating us. Thanks for the work you're doing, making our parks better and basically allowing our trees to survive even longer. Because this is this kind of a threat. The trees are going to come down. We're not even going to know what hit us with these crazy vines. So thank you so much for coming on. Thanks for the work you're doing in the community.
Oh, you're welcome, and thanks for highlighting this issue.